This is the Baseball Tonight Podcast.
This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, working in the dark, Taylor, in my home in New York, because we lost power last night with the remnants of that tropical storm that passed through the area. A lot of trees down, a lot of wires down. It's a challenge today.
It sounds tricky. A lot of folks without power, got a big meeting canceled today. College football podcast taping might be canceled today. I'm lucky I have power, but if not, we might have had to deploy Troy Farkas to Bristol to take care of matters this morning. But fortunately, we did not have to do that. So we press on, and hopefully your lights come on soon.
Yeah, we definitely had a change in our routine last night. My 16-year-old son, Jake, is used to having his Xbox time at the end of the day. He's playing with friends, and he didn't know what to do with himself last night. Me, on the other hand, growing up on a dairy farm in Vermont with no television, it was back old school. It was kind of fun. Like, I pulled up my old transistor radio because I live in New York. I listened to the Mets game. They were playing the Nationals last night. Howie Rose, you know, doing a great job. I got to listen to the end of the Indians game. Tom Hamilton calling the final outs. I was bouncing back and forth. I love getting back into radio again. It was kind of cool.
Look at you getting back to your roots. I love it. Did anyone else join in with you, or was it just you sitting there watching or listening?
No, it was all by me. Like, my son does not get it. Like, Dad, really? You're just going to sit there and listen to the ball game on the radio, like in the dark with a candle going? And I'm like, yeah, it's fine. It's fun. All right, we got a lot to get to today. Indians manager Terry Francona continues to undergo medical tests for a gastrointestinal issue, and there remains no clear timetable for when he'll return to the team. He's meeting with a series of doctors. This, according to team president Chris Antonetti. Antonetti said he doesn't know when Francona will be back and doesn't believe he'll be sidelined for a significant period. So best wishes out to my old friend Terry Francona. Yadier Molina was among the Cardinals who tested positive. All totaled, the Cardinals had 13 members of the traveling party who tested positive, 7 players and 6 staff members. Juan Soto was reinstated from the COVID injured list, but he was not in the lineup for that game last night between the Nationals and Mets. Dave Martinez told reporters that Soto's asking for a couple more days as he gets his timing back. Major League Baseball rosters are going to remain at 28 players. If you remember, at the outset of this effort to play this year, they talked about starting with 30 men on rosters, then going down to 28 and eventually to 26. But given all the challenges, they're going to stick with 28 for this year. Joe Maddon, the Angels manager, acknowledges Shohei Ohtani is unlikely to pitch again in 2020. Ohtani was diagnosed with a grade 1-2 strain of his flexor mass. He could DH for the Angels as we move forward. The Marlins had a crazy day yesterday where they again had a day without positive tests. They made a bunch of roster moves so they could put together a team. They were in Baltimore, and it wasn't until 5:15 that they actually got approval, official approval, that they were going to play. They worked at a start time. It really was like American Legion ball. A start time with the Orioles, and this is what happened in the top of the fifth inning.
Here's a ball driven on a hard liner. This is out to left, and it's going to be up, up, and away, and a home run, a line drive home run for Francisco Cervelli, and a 1-0 Marlins lead.
The great Dave Van Horn, 940 WINZ, and here was the final call.
The set, the pitch, and a ground ball to the right side, scooped up by Birdie, thrown to first for the out and the ball game. Quick and easy, 1-2-3 in the ninth. The Marlins win 4-0 in Baltimore.
You can't stop the Marlins, to quote Dan Patrick. You can only hope to contain them. They've started this year 3-1 at the top of the National League East with a .750 winning percentage. Twins and Pirates. Nelson Cruz got a big hit in the bottom of the second.
And the 0-1 pitch, line to center field, base hit, Nelson Cruz. Byron is in, Kepler stops at third base, 4-0 Twins, and still one out, and the bases remain loaded.
So the Twins offense continues to roll. That was Corey Provis on the Treasure Island Baseball Network. In the top of the fifth inning, something weird.
What do we got here?
I have no idea.
Players are coming off the field.
Yeah, I've got...
And there's a drone that is now hovering.
It's out center
around
field?
The ballpark right now, and that's it.
You talking about center field, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep, there it is.
Okay.
So,
hey.
This is the first. We have a drone delay.
It's 2020. Twins win that game 7-3. Nationals, as I said, hosted the Mets last night And Howie Kendrick, World Series hero, got the Nationals started.
And now the pitch. Swinging a long belt by Kendrick. This is way back. This one is going, going. It is gone. Goodbye. Over the Bud Light, homer seats into the brewhouse area. Bang! Zoom goes Howie Kendrick on the 3-2 pitch from Steven Matz. That's his first home run of the year.
Great to hear the voice of Charlie Slows on the National Radio Network. Josh Harrison recently signed with the Nationals after being cut loose, and this is what he did in the bottom of the second.
And the pitch. Swinging a long drive. Deep left field. Nimmo going back. Way back. Looking up. And this one is gone. Goodbye. In and out of the first row of section 102. It drops down into the New York bullpen. The first Nationals hit for Josh Harrison is a home run. Bang. Zoom goes Harrison.
Mike Trout rejoined the Angels yesterday. And before the game, he talked about the birth of his son, Beckham Aaron Trout.
Pretty incredible. You know, a lot of emotions going into it. I didn't really know what to expect, but you know, once I get this, I get to see him and obviously hold him with Jess and seeing how she was feeling, what we went through, you know, to have a child. It's pretty amazing.
Was it special to get that time with your family and him this weekend?
It was. You know, we had my parents out, her parents out, her brother was out. It was great. It was a good bonding time, you know, bringing a new member to the family, home. Just a special moment for my family and her family, obviously.
And of course, what did Mike Trout do in his first plate appearances as a dad?
Nola setting up outside. It's a breaking ball hammered out toward left center field. Hit well. Kyle Lewis back. That's gone. Big fly for Mike Trout. Welcome back. How's the song go? 1-0 Halos.
And the first inning, home run power continues for Trout. That's probably for Beckham. I'm sure that was. Homers in his first at bat, first day back, 107 feet for Trout.
And that's what teammates always say about Trout. It's like everything always works out for Mike Trout perfectly, and it certainly did in that case. By the way, superstar prospect Joe Adell made his debut last night, and he got his first major league hit, beating out an infield roller, hustling down the first baseline. We're going to be talking with Nick Kroll, the general manager of the Cincinnati Reds today, Dave Schoenfield and Paul Imbachides. Before that, check out the latest episode of The Low Post. Zach Lowe talks to Kevin Arnovitz about the race for the 8th seed in the West, the Suns' early bubble success, the enigma that is the Sixers, the Raptors reminding everyone how good they are, and coaches' fashion. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show, mate.
Welcome to the show. Whoa!
Welcome to the show, baby.
You're in the show with David Schoenfield.
And the show is actually on the road today. David, you are affected by these power outages just like I am. But, man, you went all planes, trains, and automobiles to be on the podcast today.
It's unbelievable, Buster. So I don't have
really consistent cell reception at my house here in Connecticut. I don't know. There's a cell tower right down the road, but there's a hill or something. So I'm like, oh, okay, I'll drive up to CVS and go to the parking lot and get on Buster's podcast, except there's a power line down. So I got to take a winding back way just to get out of my neighborhood. Took me 20 minutes to escape, you know, that area. I get to the CVS and there's no cell reception there. So I got to drive to the next town over. So I'm in a parking lot at the grocery store and hopefully we'll make this thing work today.
Well, I appreciate the effort. How did you follow games last night? I was telling off the top of the show about how I listened on radio.
No, I couldn't. Yeah. It's old school, right? No power, no cell phone, you know? I could not follow any baseball until I got up this morning.
So you're like, don't ask me about that eighth inning relief appearance by that Padres guy.
No, hey, it's those days. Remember, Buster, those things called newspapers? We would go to bed not knowing what happened, and we'd have to wake up and check the paper. Of course, you grew up on the East Coast. You didn't even get the West Coast games until the next day. So this is old school for us.
Exactly. All right. So we got overnight this Bleacher tweet from Austin Space, and he asks a very fair question. He says, hey, Buster, how come nobody's talking about the Rockies? Dave, talk about the Rockies.
Well, I know a little bit about them. Luckily, my editor, Dan, is a huge Rockies fan. And remember, this team made the playoffs as a wild card in 2017 and 2018. They were terrible last year. The one thing Dan likes to point out to me, the Rockies often start pretty good, and sometimes playing in that altitude, they get fatigued. Even last year, they were terrible, but they were 40-34 before they collapsed. You know, it's an organization that hasn't had much pitching depth, so once they get an injury or two and have to go to that sixth and seventh and eighth starters, that's when they struggle. But 60-game schedule, that top three of Germán Márquez, who pitched last night, John Gray, Kyle Freeland looks pretty good like he did 2 years ago when he was fourth in the Cy Young voting. That's a really good 1-2-3 if those guys stay healthy. I think the Rockies, more than any other team, benefit from this short schedule. And if the Diamondbacks and Giants, you know, continue to struggle, you know, there's a playoff position to come from the NL West, maybe three of them.
Absolutely. Getting a hot streak in 2020, that could carry all the way into the postseason. So the other day, you were a better employee than me. We got an email from our editors saying, we need a hot take from you. And I was knee deep in a long Pete Alonso feature because we were unrolling this Pete Alonso E60 this weekend. And so I was doing a bunch of writing and I ignored it. But you didn't. You were a better person than I was. What was your hot take?
Well, anybody who's paying attention, especially those who play fantasy baseball, are struggling to figure out who are the 30 closers in baseball right now, because there are not many lockdown closers, you know, plus some guys are injured. Ken Giles is out. Roberto Osuna is now out. Aroldis Chapman is just coming back from COVID, so on and so on. Yet, despite all these teams, you know, struggling to find a closer, the overall winning percentage for teams when they're ahead entering the ninth inning, this is through Sunday, it was still 94.7%, which is basically the same as it's always been. It was 95.0 last year. It's been lower in other years, but it's always around 94-95%. So my question to you, Buster, are closers as necessary as we think? Because there aren't a lot of good ones right now, yet teams are still holding on, usually, to win those games in the ninth inning.
Yeah, I think they're generally more interchangeable than they've ever been, especially the way pitchers are used these days. You know, that I think players are more accustomed. As you know, 20 years ago, you had your eighth inning guy and you had your seventh inning guy. And if a guy was moved out of one of those areas, it was a big deal. You know, that who is the primary yep. setup man? And now managers will call on relievers. I mean, basically from the first inning on, and I think everyone's ready when the phone rings. And I do think they are more interchangeable. But man, if you have a really good closer, then I feel like that's potentially a difference maker. But that I don't really look around baseball right now and say, okay, you know, unlike 20 years ago where you could say, you know, Mariano Rivera, maybe a couple other guys, you could say that guy's a lockdown guy. I don't feel like there are those guys anymore. Does that make sense?
No. Yeah, I agree. Well, last year, as an example, there were only 16 relievers who had 25 plus saves, which is the lowest in a non-strike year since 1991. So that gets to your point that it's interchangeable. Yeah, I think we're waiting for a new generation. Craig Kimbrell, he looks like he might be done, really struggling. Kenley Jansen is still good, but he's not as dominant as he was a few years ago. So, yeah, I think we're waiting to see who are the new not Mariano Rivera. There's only one Rivera, but who is that new generation of dominant closers? We're still kind of trying to feel some of those guys out.
Yeah, and a great example of what you and I are talking about is Edwin Diaz. At the moment that the Mets traded for him, he was regarded as arguably the best reliever in baseball, maybe or number two behind Josh Hader at that time. And Brody Van Wagenen, the new general manager of the Mets, gave up a ton to get him. And he was a centerpiece, and he's an absolute disaster. And I, to the point where, as you watch him pitch, you wonder, okay, at the end of this year, it might be a classic change of scenery thing. Actually, you know what could happen at the end of this year, given the financial cutbacks and everything going on? He may be a non-tender candidate. Because
that's a really good point.
Yeah, his salary is, of course, being pushed by the arbitration scale, which was built on finances, the financial system before COVID. And now as we go into this offseason, you wonder if that's a case where they're going to look at him and say, and I don't have the numbers in front of me. I'm guessing he's going to be in the range to, you know, get something $8 to $10 million. Based on what we've seen, I don't know how you do that. The Marlins yesterday, classic 2020, where they get word during the day, no new positive tests. They add a bunch of guys to the roster. They make some moves. And a few hours before the game, they find out they are cleared to play, and they make a late schedule change to start at 8:15 in Baltimore. What'd you think?
I did before my phone died last night. I was like, why is this game starting at 8:15? Yeah, typical Marlins. I mean, they weren't exactly a World Series contender before half the team got the virus, you know, so it's a hodgepodge lineup here for the next, 10 to 12 days or whatever. But then they go out and they win the game. Pablo Lopez, right, had a great outing. They're in first place. They're 3-1, best record in baseball behind the Yankees.
From a game that you didn't see last night, but you got to see some highlights and some pitching ninja highlights on your phone, Dustin May last night against the San Diego Padres. Man, he's got some flair.
Yeah, I mean, how good do you think this kid's going to be? I know the internet lit up that pitch he threading was in the first inning to Manny Machado, a 99-mile-an-hour sinker riding in on Machado. I mean, that pitch, absolutely filthy, unhittable. I mean, who throws a 99-mile-an-hour sinker? I don't know how he does it because he weighs like 130 pounds. Got that big mop of red curly hair. He is going to be something for the next 6 years for the Dodgers.
You know, and as you frame that, I was thinking to myself, 20 years ago, the guy who was considered to have the most unhittable sinker, the nastiest sinker, was Kevin Brown. And he would throw heat at like 92 to 94. And you got a guy throw a 99. Not only does it speak to the change in the game and where we've gone, but also the excellence of Dustin May. And boy, as they say, he's got some flair. He's got that little leg kick after he gets his strikeouts. Yeah, he's someone we're going to be watching for a long time. Somebody we've been watching a long time is Mike Trout, who rejoins the Angels. And we were talking before, like, you could have predicted that this was going to happen.
Yeah, homers in his first at bat, right? I mean, Mike Trout, welcome back to the Angels. They need him. You know, they've been off to a slow start. You know, really, him and Rendon have only played a few games together because Rendon missed the first series and then Trout left for paternity leave. So let's see how good that lineup can be with those two in it. Now they've called up, you know, the potential stud rookie Joe Adell. I'm not sure he's going to be quite ready for the majors. He struggled in the high minors last year, but he's an impressive young talent. I talked to him a couple years ago at the Futures game. Nice, smart, intriguing young ball player. And he has all the tools to be a really good one too.
So I'm going to put you in charge of the Angels for the moment. What are you telling Shohei Ohtani about what his future is pitching, hitting?
Yeah, this one makes me sad because we all want this to work. We're basically the first player since Babe Ruth to try to do it both ways. And now another arm injury. Joe Maddon said he's probably not going to pitch the rest of the year. I don't know. He might just have to be a hitter only. It's just so hard, Buster, to expect somebody to do both things at this level. So I don't know. Remember, he missed his last year in Japan. I think that was a foot injury, but he didn't pitch. So he's hardly pitched now in 4 years other than, you know, his first year with the Angels. So he might be a hitter only moving forward.
I kind of like the idea if they feel like that trying to start him once a week is just too complicated with the bullpen sessions and that sort of thing. I kind of wonder about the idea of turning him into a reliever, you know,
yeah.
Especially because he's a DH and you can use that spot. So let's say that he turns out to be a pretty good setup man or he turns out to be a closer. You could easily handle that type of situation, get him prepared to pitch.
Yeah, maybe that is the way it works. I think it'd have to be a late inning closer because if you bring him in the sixth inning, then you lose the DH. So
right.
If he comes out of the game, then that the next reliever is in the lineup. But, it, you know, you got pinch hitters and whatnot. But it might be a little easier to do that if he's the closer. Look, he's got the stuff. He didn't have it this year. The velo was down. The fastball command was the big thing. But now we know why. Maybe he's been hurt. I'm with you. Pitching once a week, it worked in Japan for him. It hasn't worked over here. I still would love it for it to work. He's so exciting, and there's been nobody like him, but it's tough to pull it off.
All right, sir. Well, I appreciate you making the effort to drive around and find his cell signal to be on the pod today. I hope your power comes back today.
Yeah, I don't know. We're in the sticks here in Connecticut. So hopefully by tonight so I can watch some baseball. Thanks for having me, Buster.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Nick Kroll is the general manager of the Cincinnati Reds. And Nick, thanks for joining us. As we have people on the podcast, they always like to give context for their background in baseball. So my question to you is, growing up as a kid, which was your team and who was your guy?
I grew up in just north of Baltimore in York, Pennsylvania. So I was an Orioles fan. And then I was, I had a couple guys, but Eddie Murray fan. I wasn't as big of a Cal Ripken fan as some folks. And I was a huge Ben McDonald fan as well. So
did you get a chance to meet Eddie? Have you at any point or Ben McDonald?
Actually, I got to meet both of them. At different times. Eddie, I was when I was the bat boy for the Oakland A's. He was the hitting coach, I think, for the Indians. And I was Ron Washington, our third base coach at the time, introduced me and ended up having a conversation with him, which was, you know, kind of cool and surreal. And for a guy that grew up, that was your favorite player. And Ben McDonald, I got a funny story. We drafted Max Soroller, and during the negotiation process, he's Ben's nephew. So Ben actually negotiated his contract during the draft process with me. And that was a pretty surreal moment. I told my dad about that and it made me laugh. So, that was pretty funny.
I covered Eddie in 1996 when he returned to the Orioles and when I was at the Baltimore Sun. And as you know, he had a reputation as not being really warm with reporters. I really liked him. Like, I enjoyed talking with him. And obviously, he had such depth of baseball knowledge.
Yeah, he was really nice to me. Couldn't have been nicer as a guy that, I've heard stories about this or that. But, you know, he was really nice to me, gave me the time. And I'm definitely appreciative of that.
All right. Nicholas Castellanos is off to a great start for you guys in this weird season. He probably right now is a leading candidate to be MVP in the National League. It was interesting last year after he went over to the Cubs. You know, what I kept on hearing from Cubs people was, like, this guy has an edge. Like, this is someone who's coming to play every day. And they were a little bit surprised by that, about how competitive he was. What was it like to get to know him during the free agent process?
Yeah, we talked to his representative probably right away, right at the GM meetings. I sat down with them and just, you know, Scott has Mike Moustakas as well. So we ended up signing Moose early, and then we continued to negotiate and talk with them about Nick, and ended up signing him in January. I'll speak for both guys, not just one at this point, but, you know, both guys we targeted because we wanted guys that wanted to come in and win. And that's our goal. These guys are competitors, and Nick's been great. He's been a tremendous asset to the club, you know, both offensively and he's improving defensively as well. I know, you know, people said stuff about his defense, but he's done a really good job so far in our outfield. And he works his butt off. He works every day with Jeff Pickler, our outfield coach, you know, working on his reads, routes. And I've been really impressed with just not only the hitter that he is, but how he's improving defensively, and, you know, how good he's been with the guys, you know, the competitor he's been, and just, you know, he's a really good guy, and he's been great to have around our club.
My sense is, and just reading from afar, his response to the idea that he would be a DH is that it's almost like he took that as a challenge. And as you said, he's competitive, and it became a competition for him.
I think one of the things that people don't realize about him is he's a guy that played the infield until 2 years ago. So when you're not just learning a new position, you're learning a completely new skill set in how to attack a ball in the outfield. And, you know, one of the things that we noticed about him is he was a roughly 75th percentile in sprint speed. And, you know, when you have the tools to play out there, and he really improved, you know, I think he struggled the first year in Detroit. He really improved last year in Detroit. He improved again when he was with the Cubs, and, you know, he's continuing to improve. And I think that his work ethic has really helped him move forward and get to become a solid outfielder. I think that's the biggest thing that he needed to do. And over the last couple of years, and he's doing that. And I've been really impressed with him.
Nick, as summer camp began, I was joking with one of your peers that you guys are like COVID governors. All of a sudden you all have training in baseball negotiations and player evaluations and that sort of thing. But in this 2020 situation, you're asked to you know, attack and to help build something that no one would have even imagined a year ago. Give me a day in the life of a general manager, for example, yesterday as you guys were coming traveling from Cincinnati to Cleveland.
Yeah, I mean, you wake up, you make sure that you get all your negative tests, you know, then you go from there. You know, we work from home until probably about about noon, 1 o'clock, and then we'll go to the ballpark, as opposed to, you know, years past where you came in at, you know, 9:30 or so. You try to stay away from the office or the clubhouse as much as you can. You make sure guys are wearing their masks. I got to give our health and performance staff, Jeff Head, Morgan Gregory, and Steve Bowman in particular, you know, a huge hand for what they've done with our club and, you know, putting in, you know, protocols and, you know, I know that MLB put in protocols and to try to keep everyone safe. And these guys are doing a great job in trying to, hey, look, guy gets sick and he stays home for the day. And we make sure we assess and we go through those protocols and make sure that, you know, it's not affecting anybody else, but also making sure that we have, you know, people around us that can take good care of our players as well. And, you know, just, I think coaches buy in, players buy in, and it's, look, it's, you know, you're all doing the best you can to, you know, make the best out of 2020. It's a weird year. And as you said before we went on and, you know, I think that we're, you wear your mask, you social distance and, you know, you be smart. I mean, I think that's what we're all trying to do and, you know, trying to have the best season we possibly can.
I really felt like it said a lot about your group when Mike Moustakas, Joey Votto, basically self-policed, so to speak, that you've got two veterans on the team who are saying, you know what, I don't feel good and I'm going to do everything I can to protect other people.
Yeah, and I think that's the way it's supposed to work. You know, you don't want to have somebody come in and be sick. You know, look, you in the past, you want guys to play through stuff. That's great. But you also want to be smart about this. We had last year in September, we got basically the team got sick in on a Seattle, Arizona, Chicago road trip. And I was one of them. We had eight people 4 days in a row that were completely out of commission because they were sick. And, you know, you bring one thing into the clubhouse and that's just normal sickness. That's not the coronavirus. So, you know, for us, we had a little taste of it last year. I think it helped us set up policies in place this year in spring training, like regular spring training. And you know, this was before the coronavirus hit. And I think guys got used to, hey, you're sick, you're staying home and then we'll get you taken care of. And then we'll figure out what's wrong and go from there because we don't want this to spread. We don't want, you know, anything to spread for that matter. And we want to make sure guys are healthy and can compete for the long haul.
How different does it feel to evaluate this season than versus other seasons? Like, you know, we see, you know, some teams off to fast starts, some teams off to slow starts. And in past years, we would be like, yeah, okay, it's the middle of April. But this is a different context. How does it feel like, as you assess the players and performance, you're doing that?
I think the first thing when you walk into spring training, you know where everybody's been. You know, hey, look, I took batting practice. I threw, you know, I'm on my eighth bullpen, whatever that is. You know, everybody's pretty much on the same regimen. When you came into summer camp, you had guys that might have been on a farm somewhere that they were throwing into a barn, and they were throwing, you know, 50 pitches into a barn, as opposed to a guy that that does have a catcher that can you know, lives down the street and have a throwing partner, and they can say, oh, okay, well, I can go get this guy and we can throw three times a week, five times a week, whatever that is. And I think, you know, you got some guys with a home gym, and I, you know, when we came into summer camp, you could tell there were certain guys that didn't have access to a cage. And, you know, when you're late in batting practice, for a guy that's never late in batting practice, you know that, oh man, this is going to take a little while for some of these guys because they're trying to get up to speed. So I think that's been a big deal. Figuring out who is on different schedules because of their training or lack thereof with regards to access to different things. And I think that's been the biggest challenge, just making sure that guys are continuing to get up to speed, even as we got into the season.
The other day when Mike Soroka got hurt, you know, folks in my industry immediately and reflexively were like, okay, well, who can the Braves go trade for? And just in thinking about the idea of making trades this summer, how difficult that must be for someone in your position where you know, as we get closer to August 31st, you know, the question of, okay, is this going to continue? What's the actual value of players in the marketplace? Can it, just from your perspective, you know, how would you weigh, you know, what to give up and what to, you know, potentially ask for in a trade given the current circumstances?
Yeah. I mean, I think you just got to weigh it one trade at a time, one acquisition at a time. You know, on a smaller note, we claimed a Robel Garcia from the Cubs on waivers. And, you know, we did this in, you know, first we needed some depth during the week that we had three guys at the offensive players that were out in Nick Senzel, Moustakas, and Matt Davidson. So we wanted to make sure that we had the depth because we had some other guys that opted out and went to other teams, or we lost on waivers ourselves right before the season started. So it was, you know, we kind of scrambled for depth a little bit. I think depth is going to be an important aspect as we move through this, because, you know, hey, look, guy gets sick for a day or two, you need to have somebody to replace him. But, you know, I also think that you look at that acquisition, and we got him from the Cubs, which, you know, it's 4.5 hours in a car away. He drove down, but, you know, you go through the intake testing and make sure guys healthy, and then, you know, you're losing a couple days there. So you just got to be smart about, you know, what you're giving up and who you're acquiring, how long, you know, you have them under control, all that kind of stuff. And I think everything is an individual decision based on need and where you are as well. And I think there's going to be a lot of things that go into those decisions as we move forward.
Last one for you. What are you seeing in your guys so far?
So far, we've had some tough luck. We you know, batting average on balls in play is not great for the offense, but you know, we've scored some runs. You know, defensively we've been okay. Our pitching has been really good. You know, I think we're still gelling and still come together as a team, but you know, we played, obviously had a tough one last night against a really good pitcher, but at the same time, you know, we've played well enough to win some games. We've lost a couple one run games, but I really like where we are, and I really like our club. I think you know, we got a lot of good players on this team, and a lot of good coaches. I think we you know, we're looking to win. That's our goal this year, and you know, I think that we've got a team that can do it, and you know, just look forward to watching this play out for the rest of the season.
All right, Nate, thanks for doing this. Hang in there in this crazy year.
Thanks for having me.
Jumping into the numbers.
After evaluating millions of pieces of data in the blink of an eye, the winner is Cincinnati by 200 points. Bye, you worthless hunk of junk.
This is Hembo Knows.
And Hembo is Paul Embiid. He's a researcher for ESPN. He's a honcho on the show Get Up. He tells us he's the head honcho. Of course, Mike Greenberg disagrees and said he's just a wild partier. I got to say, being a researcher right now, Hembo, for today would be a challenge given the fact that you, like I, no power where you are.
Buster, I've been sending Greeny stats from my phone, just using whatever LTE service I happen to have. That is the complete extent of my contributions to Get Up today. So I feel pretty useless, but that's a lot of us. We're all up and down here on the East Coast, and a bunch of us don't have power. And from what I've learned, we're not getting it anytime soon. So we got to hunker down. And I guess when we thought 2020 couldn't, you know, give us another turn, here we are.
How did you follow baseball last night? Because I was saying at the top of the show that I last night went old school from when I was a kid. I've told you, I didn't have a television when I was a kid, so I'd bounce back and forth on this little transistor radio. Well, I pulled that out last night. I'm listening to Tom Hamilton call the end of the Indians game. I listened to the Mets game. Anything I could get my hands on.
Good for you. I was the same. I did the same growing up. We did the radio on the front porch, and I listened to at that time, the Phillies broadcast every night. Yesterday, I was able to get a little bit of cell service on my phone just so I could keep track of the scores. So I didn't go quite as old school as you in that sense. But like you said, following stuff yesterday was much more difficult. And obviously, no one's cable's working either. So we're just sort of making this up as we go. But you and I are sort of doing this on the fly. But hopefully, the listeners understand.
All right, let's talk about, I wanted to ask you about some of the rules that have gone in for this special season. And I think for the most part, we would all agree, this is like a working audition for some of these ideas that we're going to see. First off, the extra innings rule. You know, Sam Miller wrote a really interesting piece. I think it came out a week ago or 2 weeks ago, where his feeling was he really wanted to hate it, the rule where you put a runner at second base in extra innings, and he's kind of finding himself going the other way. How about you?
Yeah, Buster, you know me. Like, for as much as I enjoy the numbers, I am still sort of a purist. So this felt very like tricked up to me. Like my first response after reading this was, the next step here is that both teams just eat soft serve ice cream after the game together, and we don't even keep score. But candidly, I don't mind it so much. It obviously adds the urgency. We've had only one game this season that's exceeded 11 innings in length, so I suppose in theory it's working. Like Sam, I wanted to hate it. I don't hate it, and even the old school in me is sort of breaking in this case. It's obviously way better for my team and for all teams, because the thing that obviously kills you is any time that your pitching staff gets decimated in a single day. In the season of this length, this is the absolute, like you said, perfect time to try it. And so far, so good. It hasn't really bothered me so much, and the results have been there. Only one game has exceeded 11 innings in length, and I think that probably makes a lot of front office executive types happy. You said you talked to those folks entering the season, and that was a big concern of theirs. Like, in a shortened season like this, if a rule like this was not in place, your pitching staff could be decimated for a week, which in this season is like a month.
Yeah, in recent years, the front offices and even some players now, you hear that they're really changing their perspective on this. Like the idea of truncating games and reducing them. And look, we love the romanticism of these incredibly long games with the twists and turns. The most famous one, you're not old enough to remember, the Rick Camp game. July 4th, 1985, Braves and Mets, and it's rain delayed, and they play until like 4 o'clock in the morning, and Rick Camp, a pitcher, hits a home run in the 18th inning or 17th inning to tie the score, and then the Mets wind up winning the game, and then there's fireworks at 4 o'clock in the morning. That's really fun, but as a couple of executives have pointed out to me, like most of the time in this day and age, baseball 2020, extra inning baseball is awful. Because you got a parade of hard-throwing relievers and you got a bunch of hitters who are trying to jack it. And what you wind up having is a lot of strikeouts. That's what we saw in game 3 of the 2018 World Series.
Yeah, it's brutal. And the way that teams use their pitching staffs now, you run out of pitchers by the 12th inning. So you're throwing like your backup second baseman in a high leverage situation in the 14th inning. I'm with you, Buster. The brand of baseball we play in 2020 was not conducive to an 18-inning game. And as much as I hate to admit this, because I did not think I would have told you this a month ago, I don't mind it so much.
The three batter rule. The thing that really jumps out at me so far is that it feels totally seamless. Like I almost don't even notice it, but I like it because then we don't have, the six pitching changes in a half inning. What about you?
This is the one I was on board with immediately. And obviously anytime baseball introduces something like this, there's always a ton of pushback from people because people just generally like to do that. But this is one I was with originally and one that I'm especially with now. What's curious to me, Buster, though, is that we've not seen a reduction in the average length of the game. Right now, the average game is 3 hours and 7 minutes. The average 9-inning game is 3 hours and 7 minutes, which would be over the course of a full season, the longest in the history of baseball. So perhaps like in that sense, we're not shortening the game perhaps as they would have intended. But I do think what you hope is that you can hang on to the audience, because nothing is more boring than three pitching changes in an inning and obviously having to watch three commercial breaks. We see it all the time. So I'm with you. This is one that I was with originally. It's one that clearly has worked and one that feels like it's just been around the game forever. Like sometimes like when you see a runner on second base to start the extra innings, you remember, oh, that's new. That's weird. You see this, like this feels like it, like you said, it's seamless. This seems like the kind of thing that we've been experiencing the whole time, and all of a sudden it was just here. So this is one that's been very smooth, and I've been behind from day one.
My guess about that time of game stat that you just gave is that's somewhat related to these expanded rosters, right? Having 30, because it's like September baseball, where having 30 players available to you for a manager, or coming up, 28 players available to you, 15 of them are pitchers. And especially with the starting pitchers, a lot of them not having been stretched out, you're seeing more and more teams rely on the bullpens. And of course, more and more teams, go to the Milwaukee Brewers strategy, like we've seen with the Boston Red Sox, using the openers. I think that's part of the reason why the games are so long.
So do I. And I think what Major League Baseball would kick back to me if I you know, posed that statistic to them is they would say, well, there's a difference between length of game and pace of play, right? We have, like, not all 3-hour games, say, are created equal. If there's a good baseball game or watching that has good tempo and good pace that happens to run 3 hours, it's all good. But obviously there are games in which you feel like you have to take a bath after watching a baseball game for 3 hours. So I think the 3-batter minimum definitely helps with that. And the pace and hopefully holds the audience, especially this year, entirely the TV audience in a way that they couldn't before, given all the changes that you know managers like to make mid-inning, which became excessive in recent years.
And the use of the universal designated hitter in the National League, again, it feels seamless because it's something we've seen all the time. Maybe the only real blip we've seen is that Madison Bumgarner is having a terrible year, and that seems to be in some way related.
That is true. This is one that I was not behind, Buster. I'm a fan of National League Baseball, as you know, and I like the difference in the league. What's also curious to me is that we have not seen an increase in offense and scoring in the National League. Now, that could be, again, using statistics from this year is a slippery slope because there are so many variables that we're not used to seeing. But I was surprised to see that through this point last season, run scoring in the National League this year is down in relation to it. So that could just be a coincidence, or it could be the fact that hitters are even further behind than they were a year ago. I don't know. But that is to say, I think a lot of people expected like a, you know, 3-5% increase uptick in scoring and offense this year from National League clubs because of this. And that's not been the case. Now, it could also be because maybe teams weren't prepared to build a roster with this being a part of it, and they're just throwing in their ninth best position player to hit in that spot in the lineup. But this is not one that's really had an immediate effect on the bottom line either. That's not to say that that won't change, but it is to say that those results have not been the way that I would have expected.
All right, Hemmo, good to talk with you, and now cross my fingers for your lights to come on soon.
Yeah, hopefully next time you and I are talking, we're doing it on better terms. Stay safe and well.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for Wednesday. Actually, I just want to bring something up real quick. The Angels guys on Mike Trout's home run call, they missed a total opportunity to go with a dad strength joke there. That would have been really good, I thought. I was thinking about that last night.
Well, and they probably, knowing Trout and his tendencies in these things, they could have anticipated that, right?
Yeah.
Okay, when Trout hits his home run in his first plate appearance back, because that's all Mike Trout, then they could have led to that, right?
Yeah, they could have leaned in a little bit more, alas. Let's go to the tweets. Steven Nestor at Steve_Nestor writes in, "Hey Buster, while awaiting test results, why didn't the Cards and Marlins use taxi squad members rather than canceling games?" Interesting question I've been thinking about as well.
Well, I mean, if you were to apply that, for example, to what happened with the Marlins and Phillies 9 days ago, in other words, you could have called up other players, but you don't know if while you're playing those games, other guys are getting infected because they're guys in your traveling group who are carrying around the coronavirus and infecting players, you know, in the clubhouse and in their travel and that sort of thing. I think in the cases Major League Baseball has really learned when they have these, you know, outbreaks that they just need to isolate the players and they do the contact tracing and get it under control. I mean, that's ultimately what happened with the Marlins. That's what happened with the Phillies, and that's what they're hoping happens with the Cardinals, who they're hoping to get back on the field this weekend against the Chicago Cubs. And we're supposed to have them on Sunday Night Baseball this week, which makes for an interesting week of preparation, Taylor.
Yeah, you might. I guess you just got to press ahead like they're going to play, hopefully. I don't know. Kind of tricky. That does it for Bleacher Tweets. Thanks for writing in, everyone. Subscribe, rate, and review to this fine podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts.
That's it for today. My thanks to Nick, to Hembo, to Dave Schoenfield. Thanks for listening, everybody. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we must fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.